The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, Jag like Michael Walker, Polanco and Franco. Kokomo Friday, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today, presented by Line and Kugels. More on their delicious beverages later on in the podcast. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White, who single-handedly got rid of the couches that you normally see behind him here on YouTube. Scott, how'd you do it, man?
A lot of brute force. Now, you know, you wouldn't remember, Frank, because you weren't here yet, but 2 years ago, yeah, we were doing a podcast like we are now. It wasn't being broadcast live on YouTube, but you know, it was being clipped to put on YouTube later. And in the middle of me talking, these guys start disassembling my living room behind me because they arrived to install Windows and they came earlier than expected. So I was still in the middle of the podcast and my living room starts coming undone behind me. So I guess I invited those guys back and this time they made off with my furniture. But no. We're getting new sofas, a sofa and a love seat for the living room, and we've made room for them. I've seen the comments. You know, it being broadcast live on YouTube, there's comments and people comment live. I've seen your comments, your snide remarks. There's quite a bit of snoot there in the comments calling our living room, the living space my family has built together, saying I'm broadcasting from my grandparents' basement or something because they don't look like the look of my sofa. That I'll admit, you know, it looks probably like it's 40 years old. And so it's not. It might be 20 years old, but it's old. And now it's gone. And so, you know, when you get a new house, you know, you pretty much empty your bank account and you have all this new space to fill. And it's like, you're going to buy furniture right away. You think you're going to die because your bank account's near emptied, right? So, you know, we took my wife's grandmother's sofa and we put it back there. Little did I know it would be the backdrop for every podcast and I'd have to hear about it every show. But, you know, the government keeps throwing money at us. So we decided to get new sofas. So hopefully this appeals to the taste of the commenters out there and they can stop giving me a hard time for the way my living room works.
I love it. Scotty is fired up.
Looks.
Scotty is fired up. I mentioned 2 weeks ago, Scott was on here ranting and raving about Will Craig not stepping on first base, who has been optioned back to the minor leagues, by the way. I don't know if that factored in the decision, but I love it, man. Scotty's rants every Friday. We're going to do it right here. Scott, have you ever seen the movie Grandma's Boy?
No. It's like your favorite movie though, right?
It is one of my favorite movies. And, you know, people are starting to understand.
Is Pauly Shore in it?
No. he might as well should have been based on the cast of that movie. Nick Swardson plays a huge role and I love him as well. But yeah, I've seen a bunch of like cheesy comedies in my life. There's a scene in that movie where people come in. The guy wasn't paying his rent. He didn't know. Long story short, people just start packing up his stuff behind him. And he's like, who are you guys? And that's what I was just reminded of. I thought it was a pretty similar situation. That is your homework, not for this weekend, because I'm just throwing it at you now. I don't know. By the end of June, let's get Scott White to watch Grandma's Boy. Today on the podcast, week 12 sleepers, two-star pitchers, random big whiff games from random starting pitchers, two bigger names you might be able to drop. I think we're going to talk about one here at the top. What's wrong with Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman? Your APR questions and much more. Let's jump right in, Scott.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
All right. Your oh, my goodness gracious standout from Thursday.
So I feel like my oh, my goodness gracious picks have leaned more toward the negative lately. And that's what I'm doing again here with Eduardo Rodriguez. Another really bad start for Eduardo Rodriguez. He gave up 6 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings. That's now 4 earned runs or more in 5 of his past 6 starts. It's taken his ERA from 3.82 to 6.03, which is bad. And hopefully you gave up on starting him a while ago, because that's, you know, he's been hanging a crooked number on you for a while now. And I don't really get what's going on with him. I don't. I'm not saying, you know, obviously he needs to be out of your lineup. Does he need to be dropped? I think it's certainly in the discussion in like a 12-team league or shallower. But you look at all the expected stats across the board. They make him out not to just be better than he's been. They make him out to be really good. His xFIP, this is updated after this start, is 3.44. His xERA, this is actually from, wait a second. There it is. Okay, his xERA is 3.57. Even his FIP is 3.70, despite, you know, a higher than usual home run rate. Even the FIP, which takes into account home run rate, estimates ERA including home run rate versus the xFIP, which does fly ball rate. You know, the FIP is 3.70, which is certainly respectable. So I don't know. It's weird. It doesn't totally add up to me. I don't see how you can trust Eduardo Rodriguez until he puts together a couple decent starts in a row, probably, is what it would take at this point. But the walk rate is like the lowest he's ever had. The strikeout rate is about the highest he's ever had. So I don't know. It's the strange case of Eduardo Rodriguez.
It is very strange for all the reasons that you highlighted. The underlying numbers are very good for him on the season. His last 8 starts, he has a 7.58 ERA. That is a long stretch of starts to be that bad. So he is one of the players I wanted to ask, Scott. Can we drop him? And I'm going to throw a bunch of names your way. Some of the most added starting pitchers on CBS. And you tell me, yes or no, can you drop Eduardo Rodriguez for these pitchers? First one up is Tarek Skubal.
Yes.
Austin Gomber.
You can. I don't think that's a must.
Tucker Davidson. I wouldn't do
that. I think from today forward, my honest opinion is Rodriguez is going to be better than Tucker Davidson. But I mean, if Davidson has one more start like the 3 he's had, I think we'll see a mass pickup event of him. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, the thing is, if you drop Eduardo Rodriguez now, again, thinking like 12 teams are shallower, who's picking him up? Probably nobody.
Not immediately. And his next start comes at the Braves. So don't like that either.
You could drop Eduardo Rodriguez for Davidson if you wanted to be aggressive and kind of beat the rush to Davidson if he does keep this going for another turn or two.
How about for Logan Gilbert?
I don't feel much urgency to do that. I know Logan Gilbert's last start, there were some encouraging signs. He had a lot of swinging strikes, but it's not quite enough, especially since the results from that start weren't very good.
Luis Severino, who is now 72% rostered and has started his rehab assignment for the Yankees.
Ooh, yeah. Luis Severino probably needs to be picked up everywhere. So if Eduardo Rodriguez is your path to making that happen, then totally fine with that.
The last one I'm going to ask you about is one of those random starting pitchers who had a ton of whiffs on Thursday, Mike Minor. He was at the Oakland A's. 7 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts. A great performance. 19 swinging strikes on 106 pitches over his last 6 starts for Mike Minor. 3.32 ERA, 44 strikeouts over 38 innings pitched. He is 58% rostered, and he faces the Tigers next week. All of a sudden, I am pretty interested in Mike Minor. Scott, would you make that swap? Eduardo Rodriguez for Minor.
I think it's fine. I think it's fine. Yeah, if I was going to put money on who had the better numbers from the rest of season from today, I would probably say what Rodriguez, but you know, they're pretty close in ranking to me, for me. Minor and Rodriguez, certainly Minor is more startable for this upcoming week. So I'd be fine with that. Minor is among my 10 sleeper pitchers for the upcoming week. And as you mentioned, he's on a really nice run right now.
Oh my goodness gracious, for me, I'm just going to highlight an entire team. And that team is the Miami Marlins, who won 11-4 against the Rockies. They had 16 hits, and we'll start actually on the pitching side of things. Trevor Rogers, 7 innings, 2 runs, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes on 87 pitches. 8 of those came on the changeup, 7 on the four-seam fastball. That's 3 straight quality starts for Trevor Rogers. He has allowed 3 earned runs or less in every start this season, a 2.02 ERA, and a 1.06 whip. To this point, I think we do have to worry about him being limited at some point, potentially being shut down. I don't think that we're anywhere close to that point, but maybe in August it's something we have to start to worry about. So continue to ride out with Trevor Rogers, but as we approach that time, I think we will talk more and more about potentially selling off on Trevor Rogers. Let's look at the offensive side of things here. 16 hits, 11 runs scored for the Marlins in this game. Jazz Chisholm, the Jazz Man. Went 2-for-4 with his 8th home run of the season. Jorge Alfaro went 3-for-5 with a run scored and an RBI. He is 24% rostered. Scott, all of a sudden we have a bunch of catchers on the waiver wire that are actually playing pretty well. So how would you rank these four? Alfaro, Eric Haas, Max Stassi, and William Contreras. Let's say if you play in a one catcher league.
Look, one catcher league, I would probably go, I would sell out almost entirely for the short term with this group. Mm-hmm. Eric Haas, I don't have a lot of faith in him because he's a 28-year-old, basically career minor leaguer, who hit 244 over his minor league career. He has a big strikeout rate now, but he did show a lot of power, and he is getting playing time even in the outfield in addition to catcher. So I think, you know, if it is a two catcher league and you have the freedom to kind of just ride the hot hand, I think he's my favorite for right now. If you're asking me to commit to one for the rest of the season, I actually think William Contreras is who I'd go with.
Any concern over when Travis d'Arnaud returns? Do you still think Contreras is going to be the everyday catcher?
No, but we're a long ways off from that.
Yeah, I believe d'Arnaud is on the 60-day IL. Don't know when he's eligible to return, but it's not anytime soon.
Let me look at Stassi here real quick, because I know he's been hot since coming off the IL. He was gone for so long, and he's one of those players who seemed like he broke out in 2020 as much weight as that seemed to have. I'm being sarcastic there. Yeah.
Stassi's been great, man. I picked him up in a 15-team two-catcher league. Stassi was available. I picked him up, I think, last week, and I've been just reaping all these rewards. So he had big power last year. He's shown some upside, but he has to stay healthy. He's dealt with so many injuries in his career. I do like Stassi quite a bit. If you do play in two catcher leagues, he might be available in yours. The last name I wanted to mention here, Starling Marte, went 4-for-5 with his 5th home run of the season. Mind you, he missed about a month and a half with, I forget what the injury, I think it was an oblique injury. And since returning from the IL, he is batting .419 in 12 games. And on the season, he has a career-high 11.7% walk rate. Whenever we would talk about players who excel in roto versus head-to-head points and the biggest differences there, Starling Marte has always stood out because he never walks this much. I don't know that he's going to keep this up for the rest of the season, but Scott, as long as he is walking a near 12% walk rate, He's going to be great in points leagues. He's averaging 3.9 fantasy points per game, which is fourth best among outfielders this season.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, frankly, he's hitting so well and still running plenty and still hitting for power. I mean, he's kind of never done all of those things in the same season, right? Had the 20 to 25 homer power and the 30 stolen bases and the high batting average. He's never done it all at once in the same season. He's kind of done two of the three at a time. But right now he's doing all of it and then the walk rate on top of it. So it's, yeah, I mean, he looks like the stud outfielder he's pretty much always been. It's just kind of a different mix right now.
And he is older at this point. He's 32 years old. If I'm reading his spot track page correctly, he is in a contract year. So maybe some added motivation there for Starling Marte to get the final contract of his career. He has been great. Hopefully he can keep this walk rate up. The sticky stuff. We've got to talk about the sticky stuff because why not? And of course, it involves my New York Yankees, those cheaters, those scoundrels. Aroldis Chapman was crushed on Thursday in the ninth inning. He allowed a game-tying two-run home run to Josh Donaldson. And when I say crushed, let me look up how far this home run was. It was a mammoth home run by Josh Donaldson. Then not only that, that tied the game. And then two batters later, Nelson Cruz hits a walk-off two-run home run. What I noticed was that the fastball velocity was down 2.3 miles per hour. The fastball spin rate was down 129 RPM. The slider spin rate was down 184 RPM. So how's that for controversy, Scott?
That is controversial. That is controversial. Yeah, no, I mean, I had the same thoughts you did. The spin rate being down so much on both those pitches. It was interesting that the velocity was also down over 2 miles per hour on the fastball. But yeah, hard to make much of it after just one outing. Obviously, Aroldis Chapman has a long track record of dominance before any of this spider grip. Is that what it's called? Spider grip?
Spider tack? Is that what it's called? Spider tack?
I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, spider tack.
Spider tack. Okay. Before any of that even really came into the scene. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens to Chapman from here, but it raises the old eyebrow.
The old eyebrow. We've got our eyes on you, Aroldis Chapman. The home run he allowed to Josh Donaldson. Actually, I thought it was further than this, but 438 feet. Nelson Cruz, 457 feet. And a very welcome...
Donaldson's kind of anointed himself the anti-sticky crusader, too. So
yeah. I've got to tell you, Scott, as a Yankee fan watching the game... It sucked, man. Going for the sweep. You're in the ninth inning. Offense is coming around. Giancarlo Stanton's hot. Get crushed in the ninth. It sucked. I've got to say. Before we hit the news and notes, you can follow and stream both Fantasy Baseball Today and FBT and 5 on Spotify. If you're listening on Spotify right now, go to the show page and hit that rectangle follow button so that when new episodes are dropped, they'll be at the top of your feed. And if you're listening elsewhere or watching on YouTube, give Spotify a try and drop us a follow. Some news and notes from Thursday. Nick Madrigal was placed on the 60-day IL with a right hamstring tear. Some potential replacements if you are in a shallower league. Ty France, Jonathan Scope, and Josh Rojas, they're all rostered in less than 70% of CBS leagues. Scott, who do you prefer from France, Scope, Rojas?
I think actually Rojas, he's been kind of cold lately, but I still prefer him.
And in deeper leagues, I will just throw the name out there, Brendan Rodgers. He's only 30% rostered. He went 2-for-2 on Thursday with his second home run of the season. Oddly enough,
I think he's coming around. I think it's happening. It's happening for Brendan Rodgers.
I hope so. It's just, is the playing time going to be there? Which we always have to worry about with the Rockies. Now that Trevor Story's back, it might be a little bit tougher.
Yeah, I mean, the Rockies have their history, but if it's happening for Brendan Rodgers, if he is breaking through and living up to the prospect pedigree, and the Rockies do play a full week at home next week, this upcoming week, so that'll only help his cause. you know, obviously they're going to get him in the lineup. Josh Fuentes could easily, you know, hit the get kicked to the curb there if they needed to. They've been a little more committed to him than either Rodgers or Hampson. But that doesn't have to continue.
Hit the road, Josh. Trevor Rosenthal is progressing, quote, rapidly through his strength program, according to A's manager Bob Melvin. Scott, if Rosenthal returned this season for the A's, do you think he would be the closer?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, we'll see what their bullpen looks like at the time, because we're talking 2 months from now, right? Yeah. But no, the way Trevino's pitched and Jake Diekman too, I don't think there would be much reason for them to switch to Rosenthal at that point, as things currently stand.
Byron Buxton had a double dong, not in the majors, but in the minors. He is currently on a rehab assignment at AAA. And it's kind of wondering if, even once Buxton returns, is Trevor Larnach going to stick around? I think he's been pretty good. I think he's earned the right to continue to stay with the team. He's batting .265 with an .830 OPS. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. How the playing time would shake out there? Well, Kirilloff leaving today with an injury. What did he injure? Ankle sprain?
Yes.
That doesn't sound like a major thing, though. So maybe it won't put him on the IL. If it does, probably not for long. But that might buy them some time to delay that decision. But, you know, Rob Refsnyder, when he was looking indispensable, he landed on the IL. Now he's back. He didn't miss that much time, but kind of feel like it took the wind out of his sails in terms of, oh, we got to find a way to get Rob Refsnyder in the lineup. So you could definitely envision a scenario where Buxton is flanked by Larnach and Kirilloff, at least until Max Kepler returns from injury.
Right.
But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I mean, who knows what Miguel Sano's numbers are going to look like at that point. Obviously, Kirilloff can play first base. It's possible they keep them all around and just rotate them. But yeah, I mean, Larnach is reaching base at like a .390 clip. So it would be genuinely surprising to me if he got optioned to the minors.
The Twins, you know, we've talked about this before, Scott, how we are so player individually focused on this show that half the time, I don't even know what the records are in baseball, just from like a macro perspective. But the Twins are very bad this year. They're 25 mm-hmm. and 37. And if they start to sell off some of their older players, and Nelson Cruz, a Josh Donaldson, that's going to open up more playing time for their youngsters. Nick Gordon is another one who, he's a former first round pick. He was very bad in the minors. He lost a lot of his prospect luster, but he's been really good since he's rejoined the team. So another name to pay attention there. I don't think you need to go out and add him, but if they start trading players away, I think Nick Gordon is a name to remember. Giancarlo Stanton is likely to be benched for the Yankees this weekend as they have a 2-game set in a National League park against the Phillies, and they do not want him playing the outfield, at least not yet. Trevor Story returned on Thursday. He finished 1-for-3 with a walk and a run scored. Alex Kirilloff, which we mentioned, left with a low-grade ankle sprain. Kenta Maeda worked 4 innings of one-run ball in his rehab start Wednesday at AAA. He added 5 strikeouts. TJ Antone was not an option out of the Reds' bullpen on Thursday. Manager David Bell did not provide a reason. More on the fun Cincinnati Reds bullpen a little bit later on. The Cardinals have activated Paul DeJong. Luke Voit could begin a rehab assignment on Sunday. Kevin Biggio could be reinstated this weekend. Travis Shaw landed on the IL with a dislocated left shoulder. And Jake Bowers was traded to the Mariners in exchange for cash considerations. I should have mentioned this at the top, but we are going to talk about prospects a little bit here because Scott released his prospect report on Thursday, and I think it's worth talking about. Before we get into those specific players that you wrote about, Scott, I did want to mention Brewers pitching prospect Aaron Ashby was moved to the bullpen at AAA to work as a multi-inning reliever in preparation for an eventual call-up this season. I wonder if their plan is, long-term for this season, to piggyback Freddie Peralta to limit his innings. So just something that came to mind there if you have Aaron Ashby in a dynasty league. Tigers outfield prospect Daz Cameron was recalled and was batting 6th on Thursday for the Tigers. He was batting .299 with 2 homers and 4 steals at AAA with a career-best 17% strikeout rate. So I don't want to put too much stock into that. It's a small sample size, this season so far, but strikeouts have always been a huge issue for Daz Cameron, and he was making a lot more contact this year. According to Scott's Prospect Update article, which you can find on the site, I'll actually throw it in the podcast description so you can follow along. Five on the verge of being called up: Wander Franco, Vidal Brujan, Joe Adell, Jesus Sanchez, and Jaron Duran. That list hasn't really changed. Those are a few of the top prospects in the league that we're currently waiting on. And Scott, you actually...
There have been some changes. Jackson Kowar was in there the last couple weeks. And to clarify, these are the five that I think are most worth stashing in redraft leagues, not necessarily the five that I think will be up the soonest.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Franco, Brujan, Adell, Sanchez. They're pretty much fixed there. Jaron Duran, I don't know. He just got back from Team USA, helping them qualify for the Olympics, mm-hmm. and had a good performance there. I mean, obviously the Red Sox are contenders this year. They have a center field problem. Duran is 24 years old and playing well at AAA. Like, it just seems too easy, right, that he'll be up at some point. I don't know. The Red Sox seem to be downplaying that idea. So could just be talk, but I don't know. What did you want to ask me about, though?
I did want to ask you about Jared Kelnick, who you led the article with, and obviously he was demoted earlier in the week. We didn't have you on the podcast that day, so I wanted to ask you, if you have Kelnick, would you keep holding on to him while he's demoted?
I think in anything 12 teams or deeper, that's probably a good idea. If I intentionally left him out of the five on the verge for this week because I wrote a lot about him in the lead of the article, and, you know, mm-hmm. I wanted to write about different players further down there. But, you know, probably from next week forward, he'll be in my five on the verge, and I would put him probably first. I think I would continue to stash him over Wander Franco and Vidal Brujan. And really, those three are the only ones I'm genuinely excited to stash in redraft leagues, just based on the way prospect call-ups have performed going back to last year, which is something we've talked about. And really, I wrote a lot about it in the article. Just the way they haven't really been paying off like we're used to, like we've grown accustomed to in recent history. So, the interesting thing about Kelnick, and maybe you guys talked about this when I wasn't on, is that he seemed fine for at the start. I'm specifically referring to strikeout rate. His first, let me see if I can find it here. Yeah, his first 13 games, he struck out 16.4% of the time. Very good, right?
Yep.
His final 10 games, he struck out 45.9% of the time. So,
yikes.
The way he characterized it is he was swinging well first, was getting unlucky, and then started to press. And I would say the strikeout rate itself seems to tell that same story. So, whatever's going on with prospects when they first get called up and struggling so badly, I don't know that Kelnick necessarily fits into that category, because I think it's probably true he was just having bad luck at first, but, you know, clearly needed a reset down in the minor leagues because he was spiraling after running into that bad luck and trying to force the issue. So I think he'll be up soon, and I think there's a good chance he'll be great from that point forward. But it is awfully frustrating too. Think you had this ace in the hole, and then it turns out he hits 096 and gets sent to the minors again.
Yep. It's definitely disappointing, but as we've seen with a lot of prospects, not all prospects, but a lot of them the past 2 years, it's been a pretty rough go here. Scott's five prospects that are on the periphery: Bryson Stott, a shortstop for the Phillies; Brett Beatty, a third baseman for the Mets; Miguel Vargas, a third baseman for the Dodgers; Jake Adair, a starting pitcher for the Marlins; and Ken Waldichuk, a starting pitcher from the Bronx Bombers, the New York Yankees. Let's jump into the Week 12 pitcher and hitter planners presented by Line and Kugels. And as always, Scott, we will start with your favorite two-start pitchers heading into next week.
Okay, yeah, my favorite two-start pitchers. Not a great week for two-start sleepers. Put that out there right away. But if you must have them, Jordan Montgomery, he's getting close to 80% rostership, but he is making two starts, and he's been pretty good lately. His matchups are nothing special at Toronto versus Oakland, And I wouldn't call him must start necessarily, but he's probably the most attractive two-star pitcher who might be available. Austin Gomber would be more attractive if his two starts weren't at home. That makes it very scary rolling the dice on him. But one of his two matchups is against the Brewers, who are a bottom five offense, and he's been great lately. He's been pretty much since the start of May. Gomber's been good, and including at home. Most of his starts have been on the road, but including at home. So it might work out. It's just a roll of the dice for sure. Marco Gonzalez, 63% rostered, and a second start from the IL didn't go as well as the first. But, you know, obviously there's a pretty good track record there. One of his matchups is against the Rays, who have struggled against left-handed pitchers. Shane McClanahan, his last two starts have been pretty rough, but at the White Sox, at Seattle, those are pretty good matchups for McClanahan. Tucker Davidson, we just talked about earlier, he's the most available of the ones I've mentioned so far, 35% rostered on CBS. Problem there is one of his matchups is against the Red Sox, others against the Cardinals, which is not a great matchup, but it's not so bad either. And then if you want me to keep going, one last one. I really don't feel great about this one. I don't feel great about any of them, but especially not this one. But Vladimir Gutierrez, highly available, 18% rostered. One of his two matchups is at Milwaukee. You know, obviously he's pitched well so far, but I'm skeptical because of the high fly ball rate. The second matchup is at San Diego, which San Diego does not rate as high as you think they do in terms of team OPS. So that's actually not such a bad matchup. But yeah, we're kind of reaching to the point where we're looking at Vladimir Gutierrez.
I wanted to ask you about Bruce Zimmerman, Scott, who looks like he's on pace for two starts next week. He's 7% rostered.
Yeah, I don't think he is. That was one I had to remove when I looked at rotation alignments. And you know, maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong sometimes, but it looks like Zimmerman is starting this weekend and Matt Harvey's actually the Orioles pitcher lined up for two starts. Zimmerman would be pretty interesting if he was lined up for two starts, but I don't think he is.
All right, Scott. So let's take a look at some of those single start sleepers that you like for next week. I think I heard you mention Mike Minor is one of them.
Yes. Yes. Tarek Skubal at Kansas City. That's probably my favorite sleeper pitcher overall. Kind of run he's been on, strikeouts jumping up over his past few starts. Yusei Kikuchi against the Rays. He's been pitching well of late, and I mentioned earlier the Rays struggle against left-handed pitchers. Mike Minor has the Tigers. He's pretty good. We'll try tapping into JT Brubaker again because he's facing Cleveland. So that's been a dicey one. Brubaker appears on this list a lot, and I don't know how often it's worked out for you, but yeah, I'll go to him one more time here.
JT Brubaker is your sleeper pitcher to your CJ Cron as your sleeper hitter, Scott.
Yep. CJ Cron's on the sleeper hitter list for this week with the Rockies at home for full seven games. Now, they're probably 10th, respectively, on the pitcher and hitter sleeper list. They do a top 10 every week. Each of those guys is 10th, so I'm just tacking them on there almost for old time's sake, Frank, because, you know, if I leave them off and the one week it actually pays off, then I'll feel pretty dumb.
What other hitters are you looking at, Scott, outside of CJ Cron?
I mentioned the Rockies have a full week at home. One of the two teams visiting is the Brewers, which is good news for Avisail Garcia. It's also good news for Willy Adames, who has had back-to-back multi-hit games here. And you look at his career splits, you realized how much Tropicana Field was holding him back. So Coors Field, other end of the spectrum. His other series this week is at Miller Park, so also opposite end of the spectrum. I don't think it's called Miller Park anymore, right? They recently changed their name.
Did they?
I think so. I heard that.
I'll look it up.
It's a shame. Miller Park, Coors Field, Battle of the Brands.
It is.
Willy Adames was taking the beer tour.
American Family Field is what Google is telling me.
Yeah. Anyway, Justin Upton just got a hitting streak going. Been really productive since moving to the leadoff spot for the Angels. I think he's still batting there. And four left-handers on the schedule. He has a near 1,000 OPS against left-handers so far this season, Justin Upton does. Tigers have pretty good matchups this week. Robbie Grossman is now homered in back-to-back games, so he's picking it up again. Of course, we know Jonathan Scope is hot. I like both of them. I mentioned Crone. I mentioned Rogers earlier. Brendan Rogers, with all those home games, is on this list. And I'm going to leave it there. There's a couple other names I could mention, but then you wouldn't have to go read the article. So can't give the whole thing away here on the podcast.
Professional broadcaster. Professional broadcaster,
that's
right. Scott White,
that's
with the old T's. Go read the article, of course, cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. And just to recap, the five teams with the best hitter matchups: Cleveland, the Mets, the Brewers, the Padres, and the Nationals. The five teams with the worst hitter matchups for next week: the Astros, the Rangers, the Phillies, the Reds, and the D-backs. So there you have it. The Week 12 Pitcher and Hitter Planners presented by Leinenkugels. And I'll actually be at Citi Field on Friday enjoying Jacob deGrom versus Fernando Tatis. I am super excited about this matchup. If anyone else watching or listening to this is going to be at Citi Field, hit me up. We'll meet up. We'll grab a beer or something. And speaking of beers, I'll have one or two before I leave for the stadium. Little pregame action. There's nothing better to do that with than a Leinenkugels Summer Shandy to get you ready for that baseball game. It's an awesome blend of crisp beer with refreshing lemonade that honestly just hits different. And the Summer Shandy isn't all they offer. They also have a Session Helles, which has all the flavor of a crisp German-style beer, but it's only 99 calories. And if you're into IPAs, Leinenkugels offers their Lemon Haze IPA, which is a well-balanced hazy IPA that blends hops with delicious lemonade. So no matter what type of beverage you are craving, Leinenkugels has you covered. Just head on over to leine.com. That's leinie.com. Or follow Leinenkugels on Instagram or Facebook for more information about all of the delicious beers that they brew. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we've got to talk about Dallas Keuchel. Dallas Keuchel? Really? Do it next here on Fantasy Baseball Today. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. So Dallas Keuchel was that other pitcher, random pitcher, with all these whiffs on Thursday. He was going up against the Toronto Blue Jays. 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 8 strikeouts, and a season high 21. That's right, 21 swinging strikes on 104 pitches. His previous season high in swinging strikes was actually 13. He threw a season high 35 cutters, and I love it. I don't know why he didn't do it sooner. It was far and away his best pitch last season. And he threw it 31% of the time last year when he had a great, whatever it was, 10, 12 starts. But entering Thursday, he was only using the cutter 21% of the time this season. Again, that is Dallas Keuchel. And I know he's fringy, Scott, but I thought this was very encouraging.
I agree. It was encouraging. I want to see more of it. I don't think he's going to have another 21 swinging strikes. I think that was just a total anomaly. But yeah, emphasizing the cutter may be the path forward for him. And we'll see where it goes from here. I'm actually looking to see if 21 swinging strikes was his career high. Okay, I got back as far back as 2016. He had a 23 swinging strike game. So it was not a career high for Dallas Keuchel, but it was one of his best.
I should probably ask you this after the podcast, Scott, but maybe other people are wondering as well, and this can help them do some of their own research, but where do you go to find game log swinging strikes? Because I go to Brooks Baseball, but I have to like calculate all of them together. And it takes a
baseball
while.
Reference. If you look at the player's game log, it has a swinging strikes column. So that's what that's where I'm looking. I don't know if the count ends up being the same as baseball savants. I don't know. Sometimes there seems to be a discrepancy there. I don't know why there would be, because that seems like something you should be able to count pretty easily if you're watching.
Yeah.
But I don't know. For whatever reason, they don't often line up exactly.
That is probably the biggest flaw in my analysis, is I don't know how to use baseball reference. So I think I need you to teach me, Scott. We've got to do a baseball reference tutorial, because I feel like there's a lot on there that I am not taking advantage of. So
I think we'll it's still happen. The most powerful. It offers the most bang for the buck of any of the sites. It doesn't have quite the same level of sophistication as Baseball Savant or Fangraphs, but it has the highest concentration of useful and usable. The best combination of that.
All right, so well,
that's my promotion for baseball reference. Free promotion there.
We'll hook up at some point and you'll teach me. We had a pitching masterpiece in Philly on Thursday. Ian Anderson against Zach Wheeler. And Ian Anderson, 7 shutout, 4 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. This comes after 2 clunkers, so a welcome sight there from Ian Anderson. And then Zach Wheeler, I mean, even in my best possible projection, I don't think I could have seen this coming from Zach Wheeler against the Braves. Yeah. 8 shutout, 4 hits, 0 walks, 12 strikeouts for Wheeler over his last 5 starts, a 1.49 ERA, 56 strikeouts to just 5 walks, 56 to 5, over 36 and two-thirds innings pitched for Wheeler. He lowers the ERA to 2.29. The whip is now down at 0.90. And Scott, my question to you is, should we rank Wheeler ahead of his teammate, Aaron Nola, rest of season?
I'm starting to wonder. Yeah, we might be there. We might be to that point. I was a little skeptical of Wheeler's jump in strikeouts when it first started, but now this is 4 out of 5 starts, double-digit strikeouts, and the whiff rate is way up, and the pitch selection has changed. I mean, he's kind of gone to the old trick of ditching the sinker for more four-seamers and sliders. It's more of a maximize the missing of bats approach, and not only that, but he's getting ahead of the count better. He's throwing more strikes, so that combination has really allowed him to have this kind of second breakthrough where he goes from good to great. And obviously with each passing start, I buy into it more and more. I don't know that anything's wrong with Aaron Nola lately, but it's been kind of frustrating. He's definitely underachieved so far.
Can I drop Matt Chapman? This is a question that I received on Twitter, and I was going to pair him up with Eduardo Rodriguez, who we've already spoken about. So Matt Chapman, he went 0-2. Well, at least 0-2 last time that I checked. Probably update that. But last time I saw, he was batting 202 with a 633 OPS is Matt Chapman. And he's still 89% rostered. What'd he finish? No, he went 0-3. So that's now 201 with a 630 OPS for Matt Chapman. He's still 89% rostered. The problem is, and we've talked about this before, who are you dropping Matt Chapman for? Because I'll read off a bunch of third basemen right now that are rostered in less than 70% of CBS leagues. None of them really excite me. So, Scott, would you drop Matt Chapman for Miguel Sano?
Look, I'd rather start Sano next week. I don't know. It's difficult to say that. But, like, the only reason you'd be holding on to Chapman right now is because of track record, right? There is nothing redeeming in actual numbers. The expected stats all look awful, and of course the actual stats do too. And this is after an off season where he had surgery to repair a torn labrum in his hip, which, I mean, part of the reason we thought Buster Posey was done as a fantasy asset is because his first year back from that same surgery, he didn't look so good at the plate either. So it may be affecting Chapman a lot. And it may not be this year where we see him make a full recovery from it. So Sano is not somebody I have a lot of confidence in, but Twins have pretty good matchups next week. He's been hitting the ball well for the past week. I just don't really see you regretting that move. Not so much because Sano will be good, but just because I'd be surprised if you end up missing Chapman.
Just give me a yes or no on these, Scott. Would you drop Matt Chapman for Alec Bohm?
I guess.
How about Patrick Wisdom?
Yeah, I mean, right. You're not getting me excited about these names, but yeah. I might, oh, man, I don't know, Frank. I imagine the guy who's asking already has somebody else he can plug in at third base, but maybe not. Yeah.
That might be the case. A few other names, Hunter Dozier.
No.
Jonathan India.
Ooh. No, I don't think I could do it.
And the last one is Luis Arias for the Brewers.
No.
All right. Luis
Castillo. I know that was painful. That was like extracting teeth.
No, it was fine. Luis Castillo made a start on Thursday, which means we have to talk about it. He went 5 2/3, one hit, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 96 pitches. Pretty good ratio there for him. He only allowed 4 hard hit balls. I thought that was a step in the right direction. He actually left the game with runners on first and second. He was only allowing 1 run at the time. Lucas Sims. That's right. Lucas Sims, the closer, the one that we have dubbed the closer of the Cincinnati Reds, came in the 6th inning of the game, and he went on to allow 3 runs to score. So obviously, 2 of those were charged to Luis Castillo. The final line doesn't look very good, but I actually thought that Luis Castillo pitched much better in this one. So that's 2 solid starts in a row now. Anything that you would like to add, Scott, on Luis Castillo?
Yeah, it is 2 solid starts in a row. Obviously, you shouldn't be flirting with the idea of dropping him right now. I think more likely starting him because he is in line for 2 starts next week at Milwaukee, at San Diego. So I think in points leagues, I would say yes to that for sure. And even in categories leagues, I might consider it. As for Sims, you know, clearly it was a high leverage situation he was brought into. So I don't know that negates the idea that he's their most trusted reliever right now, at least, you know, other than Anton, who they're probably not going to use in save situations. 5 of his previous appearances had been 4 saves. You know, since he struggled so much, I wonder if David Bell loses confidence in him, but I would still say Sims is the guy to have in that bullpen for saves.
All right, let's hit a few waiver wire options here, Scott. I'll read off what they've done recently. You tell me your excitement level. Or let's just do, are they a must add? That's probably a better way to do it. Jonathan Scope went 3-for-4 with his 10th home run on Thursday. His last 24 games, 24. Pretty big sample-ish, kind of. 358 batting average with 8 home runs. He is 63% rostered, Scott. Must add, Jonathan Scope.
I wouldn't say must add. No. I think there's a limited ceiling here. I think we know exactly who he is, and he's hot right now. And I like him as a sleeper hitter for this upcoming week, but I don't think he's going to be a fixture for standard size leagues moving forward.
Willy Adames went 2-for-5 with 2 doubles and 2 runs scored. He is 39% rostered. And shout out to Tom Brubeck, who tweeted me this earlier, and he said
Brubaker.
Not Brubaker, Brubeck. He said Adames continues to have an 865 OPS away from Tropicana Field in over 700 plate appearances at this point. Must add Willy Adames. Yay or nay?
Well, no. The must add threshold, I think, is pretty high. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to end up saying no to all these guys.
All right, so where would
I like
you
Adames
add
for next week? If you need a shortstop, he's probably one of the more attractive ones out there, but I'm sure he's available in some of my leagues, and I'm not rushing out to add him in all of them. So that by definition makes him not must add, right?
I think so. And the last one I'll mention, Joey Votto went 1-for-4 with his 6th home run. He did add 2 strikeouts. He's only batting .217, just returned from injury, but he is hitting the ball the hardest he ever has in the StatCast era this year at, I don't have his age in front of me, but I'm sure he's approaching 40 years old. At .262 XBA, .518 X slug, those are very good numbers for Joey Votto. It's just, it hasn't translated yet. He's 44% rostered, Scott. Your excitement level for Joey Votto?
Yeah, and maybe we should have stuck to that that standard. Yeah, it's let's put it on a 1 to 10 scale. All right. We're figuring out this segment as we go. And I would say my excitement level for Joey Votto is about a 6. I think that's, I was kind of excited for him before he broke his thumb. Now that he's back, I think he could end up being usable at a position where I know I have a need in several leagues. I would probably rather invest in Votto than like Josh Bell at this point. I said Josh kind of weird. Josh Bell. Let's try that again with a little more confidence. Josh Bell. It's not my kind of guy. Joey Votto is. There you go.
Did we just create a new meter? Is that the Excite-O-meter?
Yeah.
Or I guess we could go with like waiver-o-meter, but that's kind of boring. I like Excite-O-meter more, so yeah.
It's more exciting.
For sure. Joey Votto is 6 on the Excite-O-meter in deeper leagues. Mentioned the name a few times now, Jake Fraley. He stole another base on Thursday. He now has 3 steals over his last 7 games. So in deeper 5 outfielder leagues, he's only 5% rostered. And Christian Arroyo for the Red Sox, he went 1-for-3 with his second home run of the season. He added 4 RBI, so not overly exciting, obviously, but he is batting .284 on the season and has started 7 of the last 9 games for the Boston Red Sox. I was going to go into a deeper look on what's going on with Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman this season, and even Cody Bellinger, 3 early round picks that are not performing to the level we expected them to this season, but we have other things that I would like to get to. So is there anything in particular that you would like to hit quickly on Betts, Freeman, or Bellinger?
No, not specifically. Okay. I'm curious about what's going on with Mookie Betts and how much it has to do with all the environment changes we've seen this year, but I don't have any real conclusions yet. I suspect he's still going to be a top 5 outfielder, but it's a situation I don't feel like I have a great handle on yet.
For Mookie Betts, you mentioned the environment, Scott. I think that's a good place to start with him. 7.6% home run to fly ball ratio entering Thursday. Last year, that was 19%. And in each of the previous 3 years, 2018 through 2020, it was at least 13%. So way down for Mookie Betts. Some of his hard hit numbers are down as well. So that will factor into that, but
it would appear the environment's about to change again. So
yeah, hopefully
it's hard to say anything environment related with a great deal of confidence right now, because in addition to the deadened baseball, we now have a spin change happening. So who knows? Who knows where we go from here? Certainly not me.
Freddie Freeman of this group has the best underlying numbers. So I think he's just been really unlucky. He's got a .226 BABIP on the season. That's .337 his career. So,
yeah, I have zero concerns about Freddie Freeman. I've long had concerns about Cody Bellinger.
Yep.
I am developing mild concerns for Mookie Betts, but ultimately I'd be more likely to buy him than sell him right now.
Cody Bellinger, I'm not so sure that I would be looking to buy. He's betting .200 in 11 games since returning from the IL. Hard contact is way down. Strikeouts are way up. Remember, coming back from off-season shoulder surgery. So I think this is kind of expected, a slowish start for him. Some Thursday leftovers, Gene Segura, 3-for-5 with 3 RBI. He's now batting .323 on the season. He's been great. Odubel Herrera went 2-for-4 with his 4th steal of the season. He has let off 8 straight games for the Phillies, only 30% rostered if you are desperate for an outfielder. Mitch Haniger had a double dong and now has 16 home runs in the season. He's slowed down quite a bit. He's got a .238 batting average over his last 21 games, but the expected numbers are still very good for Mitch Haniger. Gleyber Torres went 3-for-4 on Thursday, albeit only 3 singles. He is now batting .338. In 23 games since hitting his first home run back on May 9th. So I think he was pressing for that first homer, and now things are starting to fall into place. Still hasn't been a lot of power, but the batting average, very good for Gleyber Torres recently. Christian Vasquez had a big game, and he needed it. He went 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored and 3 RBI. Not a lot of bullpen updates, but that's fine. I'm actually okay with that. For the Phillies, Hector Neris had his third blown save of the season. He allowed a solo home run to Freddie Freeman in the 9th. I kind of give him a pass for that, obviously. And Liam Hendricks got his 16th save of the season. To stream or not to stream, Scott, for the weekend. And we will start with Friday. Keegan Aiken at the Rays, Garrett Richards versus the Blue Jays, Tarek Skubal versus the White Sox, Justin Dunn at Cleveland, Brady Singer at the A's, and Cole Irvin versus the Royals. This list was much worse yesterday, so it got better.
It got better. How did it get better? I was Skubal here yesterday? Because
no, he wasn't.
I like Skubal in all circumstances.
Yes.
Yesterday I picked Irvin versus KC. I'm going to stick with that. And I think I picked Garrett Richards versus Toronto. I'm going to stick with that.
For Saturday, Alex Cobb at the Diamondbacks, James Kaprielian versus the Royals, Jackson Kowar at the A's, Vince Velasquez versus the Yankees, Joe Ross versus the Giants, and Cy Young contender John Gant at the Cubs.
Come on, did you see his last start?
Come yes, on. He turned back into John Gant.
Yeah, the magic wore off. James Kaprielian versus KC, it's pretty good. None of the others are very good.
Cobb has been okay recently, and the Diamondbacks are bad.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not wild. John Gamm might actually be my second choice here.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. All right, Saturday is rough. We'll just leave it at that. Sunday, I actually think Sunday is okay here, Scott. Patrick Sandoval versus the Diamondbacks, Chris Bubich at the A's, Adrian Hauser versus the Pirates, Drew Smyly at the Marlins, Logan Gilbert at Cleveland, and Martin Perez versus the Blue Jays.
How many swinging strikes did Sandoval have in his last start? 32?
I think so.
It's good to see him getting another start after that. I think I would prefer Adrian Hauser versus Pittsburgh to him, to Sandoval. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh has officially become the worst offense in terms of OPS. But Sandoval would probably be my second choice. And my third choice...
Gilbert.
Logan Gilbert? All right, fine. Logan Gilbert.
I was actually saying Gilbert. It's a wrestling thing, Scott, so we don't have to go down that rabbit hole. But yeah,
but you wanted me to pick Logan Gilbert, right?
Yeah. I don't mind Logan Gilbert against Cleveland. It's actually Logan Gilbert versus Shane Bieber. So
I have no frame of reference for wrestling. That whole phenomenon just passed me by.
Oh man, I could go down a rabbit hole. All right, I'll just tell you very quickly. Gilbert was a parody of Goldberg, who actually played college football at the University of Georgia for the Bulldogs.
I did know that, yeah.
So
I
he
did
was
know that.
Very popular in the state of Atlanta. State of Atlanta. Oh, gosh. It's been a long week, Scott. So in the state of Georgia. So I thought I would just marry those two things together because obviously you are from there. Let's wrap this whole thing up with some Apple Podcast review questions. Leave a 5-star review with a question if you enjoy the podcast, and we will answer it in the future. This one's from The Ginger King 1031. Grade the trade. 12-team Roto Keeper League. I give Charlie Blackman for Tim Anderson and the Yerminator, your mean Mercedes.
A.
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure what the other person is thinking.
You love to hear that. From Austin Frankie. Hey, that's me. Not really. Grade the trade. 10-team 5x5 Roto with 7 keepers. I give Anthony Rendon and Lucas Giolito for Nick Castellanos and Craig Kimbrell. Currently in 9th place, really needed saves, ERA, runs, home run, RBI. Oh.
It's a no for me.
It's a no for me, dog.
It's a no for me. It's a D plus.
I don't think it's egregious, actually, Scott. I think it's a C minus. I wouldn't have done the trade. I think Giolito for Castellanos at this point is a fair trade. Rendon for Kimbrell, I think in a vacuum, you probably still want Rendon, but Kimbrell has been one of the 3 best closers in fantasy this year.
He's been really good.
Yeah.
Part of it for me is the keeper aspect.
Yeah, true.
If it was just a... I could maybe give it a C- if it was just a redraft league, but with the keeper consideration there, I'll go D+.
That is fair. 12-team head-to-head points. Oh, this one's from Jerry in New Jersey. 12-team head-to-head points. Start 4 outfielders, 2 utility, and 6 starting pitchers. I have a beefy pitching staff, thanks to you guys. Who should I trade to receive a high-profile hitter? Mostly need outfield, but can upgrade anywhere. What would it take to get a Rafael Devers or JD Martinez type? I have Jacob DeGrom, Max Scherzer, Corbin Burns, Lance Lynn, Ian Anderson, Sandy Alcantara, Framber Valdez, and Luis Castillo. It is a keeper league, so Burns is kind of untouchable.
Yeah, he should be. I'd be most likely to shop Lynn, I think.
Yes, that is the answer.
I think that's the best combination of you'll actually get something high quality for him, but particularly considering it's a keeper league, you won't mind giving him up as much as some of the others. So yeah, shop Lynn. He might be able to get you a Devers or a JD Martinez type. I would look first to who needs the pitcher versus what precise hitter do you want, and then see, you know, what kind of hitters they might have available for trade. But yeah, you should aim very high with Lance Lynn.
And that is so important, Scott, that you bring up, and you brought it up before, but when making trades, it's not about what players you want. It could be what categories do I need, but you have to look at what is your position of strength. For this gentleman, it is pitching, and you have to find someone who is compatible, a trade companion who is in need of pitching. So don't just lock onto certain players, although you might want them. You got to find someone who needs pitching, ultimately. So it's a good point that you bring up there. From Spike Vermont, grade the trade. 12-team head-to-head points with 5 outfielders. Send a Eugenio Suarez for Jock Peterson. Peterson. Why did I say it like that? Peterson.
We've both been saying words and names strangely today.
Whenever we get to Friday's podcast, Scott, it's just, it's wacky, man.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Jock Peterson has much value in a 12-team league, even a 5 outfielder format. I know Suarez has been terrible, but I still retain some hope for him bouncing back. So this trade's a no for me. I think it's a D.
Ooh. Eugenio Suarez in points leagues this season is averaging 2.2 fantasy points per game. Scott, would you like to guess what Jock Peterson is averaging this season?
In a standard points league, 2.4?
2.2. The same exact amount as Eugenio Suarez. Yeah. And as bad as Suarez has been, I would still bet on him being better than Jock Peterson rest of season. The last one of the week. We're here. We did it. From Kevy Two Time. Grade the trade. 12-team head-to-head categories. Send Marcus Semien for Trevor Story.
Yeah, I think you have to do it.
Yep.
And I would give it a B+.
All right. And you know what? I just realized as I was saying that, it kind of sounded like I didn't appreciate what we do, Scott. Like, we're here. We did it. It's the end of the week. It's not like that. So I would like
I think you should celebrate that we made it to the end of your notes. When's the last time that happened?
Now that is something worth celebrating. So I rescind my statement about being excited that the week is over. I'm actually sad. I wish we could podcast every day of the week. No, I don't actually wish that. You know, we need weekends off. I don't know where I'm going with this.
What do you wish for, sir?
I need to wrap this thing up. For Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again on Monday. Bye-bye.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.